She's landed speaking roles at San Diego Startup Week. Plus, all my windows like pop behind each other. Okay. She's landed speaking roles at San Diego Startup Week and on-site at USD. She inspires parents who are struggling and tired by appealing to their child's sense of empathy and their desire to grow up. She currently resides in Carlsbad, California. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So you describe yourself as an accidental author. How does one become an author accidentally?
Well, it does take a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to accidentally become an author. But what I mean by accidental author is I think some little girls and little boys grow up knowing what they want to be. And one of the many things someone can grow up wanting to be is an author. That, however, was never on my list of things I want to be when I grow up. And so now having a published book under my belt, I realize, oh, I'm an accidental author. And in fact, my husband one day said, well, I never thought I'd be married to an author. And I said, well, that makes two of us. And, you know, I had this idea for this children's book and enough people told me I should run with it. And then I was working side by side with a colleague who wrote a book in a completely different genre. And I was like, well, if she can do it, I can do it, but not in a mean girls kind of way, more of an, someone I actually know in real life has written and published a book, not just some, you know, vague New York Times bestseller. And So, you know, long story short, I've got this published book under my belt and never would have put that on my bingo card in a million years.
So what was your, you know, like in your first adult life, what was your profession?
I have been in the talent acquisition realm for the last 20 plus years, which is a very fancy way of saying I'm a headhunter, in the automotive design spectrum, which is quite ironic because I can't draw a straight line, but I can find and hire the people who can draw very straight lines and cars and beautiful, beautiful things. So that's my quote unquote day job, if you will. Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how did you get started in that?
I was in a different, very different profession that I hated. And I was just doing it to pay the bills.
And what was that? What was that profession?
I was, how would you describe? I was slinging booze, for lack of a better phrase.
Oh,
I was,
okay.
But not like in a bar. I was supplying grocery chains like a Vons or a Ralph or Nelson's with different
distribution.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it was way too early in the morning for me. And it was a very salesy job. And I can talk to anybody, but I'm not a salesy person. That whole don't take no for an answer did not land with me. If I got a no, I was like, okay, great. Let's go to lunch. Like it wasn't for me. So yeah. I was in that profession, didn't like it. So I came home one day with a good old-fashioned bottle of wine, probably one that I was trying to sell and couldn't sell, and sat down with a good old-fashioned newspaper. This is back in early 2004. Sat down with an old-fashioned newspaper and a red Sharpie, just like you see on TV. And I sat down at the kitchen table with my roommate and just went through and started circling jobs that was interesting that looked interesting because they always say it's easier to find a job when you actually have a job. And That's how I landed in that role. So,
and how long were you in? Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. How long were you in talent acquisition? Are you still there?
I'm still in talent acquisition. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So okay.
It's not anything I ever thought I would get into. The part in the ad that, kind of sparked my interest. There was one line that said, must be willing to travel. And at the time I wasn't married. I didn't have a family. So I was like, I've got a passport. Let's go. And 20 some years later, I'm still here doing it and still traveling for work a bit, which is nice. So,
yeah. Yeah. So I assume that being a parent is a big part of your author journey.
Absolutely. The book, while it's a fictional book, it is based 100% on the true story of my son who did not sleep through the night till he was just over 4 years old, which for anyone who's had a child knows that's not how long it's supposed to take. So yeah, it's not supposed to take that long.
Oh my gosh.
Right. So it was a very long 4 years for my family. My son was fine. He was having a great time sleeping with mom and dad all the time, but that meant mom and dad were not well rested and therefore not the best parents we could be or the best partners to each other or the best employees or any of that. So
right.
The book is based on the kind of light bulb idea and light bulb moment that turned things around for him and helped his sleeping dramatically.
That's, you know, it's funny because you hear a lot about, you know, when you're a young parent, which was many years ago for me, you hear a lot about like, what do they call that? Attachment parenting versus the, I don't know what they call it, cry it out parenting,
right?
You know, with the babies. And it's such a, you know, divisive point.
Very.
But at a certain point, if you're doing the attachment, there comes this time. And I don't think anybody really talks about, you know, the point when you're like, okay, they got their attachment needs met. Now they need to like take the next step into being their own person.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And co-sleeping works for a lot of families. And it worked for us for a very little bit. And then it became very clear that it was no longer working for us. And that the only one of the three of us that was doing well the next day was our son. And he didn't have to go to work. He didn't have to pay the bills. He got to finger paint all day or whatever it was. So we had to find a method to encourage him to sleep on his own through the night. And we finally found one. And that's where the book came from.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sneeze. Okay. That's cool. That's cool. And how did you find, like, did you talk with other parents before you went ahead and wrote that book? Or did you just say, you know, I've told my friends about this and it seems like everybody was impressed that I came up with this, so I should write a book about it?
It was a bit of both. You know how moms and dads, they'll, the same way people do in a professional setting at the water cooler, they kind of talk about their weekend or what they did over the weekend or what they're looking forward to or what they're not looking forward to, what was fun, what wasn't fun. Parents, I think, commiserate, for lack of a better phrase, at the playground or at school pickup or drop off or church or whatnot. And it had become known to a handful of our family friends and whatnot that we were struggling with our son sleeping. And then when it started to turn around, they're like, oh, well, what did you do? And a lot of people thought some of the traditional ideas, sleep training or the cry it out method, or, you know, one of the millions of ways parents have traditionally gone about fixing that problem, which we, by the way, had tried all of them. We paid thousands to a sleep trainer. We did all kinds of stuff. If you had told me to bathe my son in a pool of Jell-O and he would sleep, I would have said, what flavor? Like, what color? I'm good. I'm there. I'll do it. But no one thankfully proposed that. But I just, you know, I chatted with a bunch of different moms and over the years, I did nothing with it really. But had enough moms say, you got something there, Beck. You should look into that. Or what a great idea. Or what a fun concept. You should, you know, put pen to paper. And I think just enough people started saying that I finally started kind of listening to it and believing it. And then that combined with, you know, as I mentioned, a friend and colleague who had written a book in a different genre. And I said, well, let me talk. She facilitated an introduction with her publisher. I ran it by that publisher, just a conceptual thing. I hadn't written anything down. And the publisher at the time was an older lady. And she said, I have 7 grandchildren. And if I had used that idea, I think they would have slept better sooner than they did. And I was like, does that mean you're signing me on? And she said, yes. So it was a slow road until I got the yes, and then it became a quick road. So
what I really like about it, because when I did look at the book, I was like, oh, huh, this is another cry it out thing, right? Mm-hmm. Because I had been, you know, my famous quote from my dad was, when they start acting like a monkey, you might want to put them in a cage, meaning a crib, right?
Right, right.
But what I really like about the approach that you have is they have to have enough self-awareness and language and intelligence and empathy in order to understand the logic behind it. So you've already gotten past the attachment,
right?
You've already gotten to a place where they're secure enough that they can relate to you and your experience as separate, you know, which I think is like the right time.
Thank you. It unfortunately means it's because they're old enough to understand all the things that you just said, which means, again, unfortunately, you've been struggling it with this issue for so long, but any way to end it is welcome, you know? And right. I think had I come up with that idea when he was much younger, then like you said, it wouldn't have landed with him. It wouldn't have resonated with him.
Right.
He wouldn't have been able to understand the concept that, you know, when you sleep in mommy and daddy's bed, we don't get a good night's sleep. Also, right. you know, so that empathy wouldn't have kicked in for him. So, and it's a concept that you can take not just at home, but on vacation and to grandma's house and to the, you know, sleepovers, things like that. So, it's one of those books you hope no one will ever need, but chances are you're going to need it at some point. Cause even the best sleepers, I've been told, regress at times when a baby brother, a baby sister show up or you move homes or things like that, big life changes. So it's a concept that once they reach a certain age, to your point, then it's hopefully easier to explain things and get them to understand the benefits of them sleeping well.
Yeah. Yeah. And even beyond sleep, I think, you know, like really highlighting empathy for other people's experience can give them like a really good basis for developing their communication skills, like in the classroom with other adults, et cetera. I think that's really, really clever. So you went and found a publisher. You didn't self-publish.
I did not self-publish. And I don't want to give myself credit in saying I went and found a publisher. As I mentioned, I had this other colleague who had just been signed by a certain publisher and she facilitated an introduction. And it was a bit of the stars aligning at the right time. This publisher also wanted to increase their market presence in the children's fiction genre. So not that my book's not worthy. I will stand by the fact that it is just as worthy as any other book out there. But it was a bit of a great timing situation where I was literally handed this introduction. It was a warm introduction as opposed to me just, you know, a cold introduction. And it all worked out. And we got, you know, I got a acceptance letter pretty quickly. And then COVID hit, which was great. It actually turned out to be a bit of a blessing because what I've been told is in the publishing world, the deadlines are pretty concrete. But because we got a lot of this process started during the beginning stages of COVID, when there was so much uncertainty, there was a lot more leniency in my deadlines, which was first time author, very, very generous.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did you find an illustrator? Who illustrated the book for you?
I don't remember which website. It was one of those work, like gig-based websites, like Fiverr. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. It may have been something similar to Etsy, but more people looking for work. And I reached out to probably a half a dozen different illustrators, asked for samples of their work to see what kind of style there was that I liked or didn't like, narrowed it down to two illustrators and then committed to one. And then again, the pandemic rolled out and she said, I'm really sorry. I can't rely on such uncertain times in gig work. I've got to go get a 9-to-5. And I was like, okay. I mean, obviously I understood, but it was a bit stressful. So then I contacted one other illustrator that was high up on my list and he was available. And so we worked together a long distance. I want to say he's in Michigan, could be Minnesota. It's somewhere far away and cold from me.
It starts with an M.
Yeah. And it starts with an M. Montana, maybe. I'm not sure. But, and we went back and forth and it was actually a quite enjoyable process. He was very receptive and didn't push back on anything because he said, you know, this is your book, Rebecca, it's not mine. And I was really lucky to find him because, again, stick figures is about my talent when it comes to drawing.
I mean, it might work for a kid's book.
Right.
So what's the most surprising thing that has happened to you as a children's book author that you didn't have any concept of or didn't anticipate at all?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the one thing that has surprised me has been people's immediate acceptance of the fact that I'm an author and now what am I going to do? So similar to when you're dating and people say, oh, you guys have been dating for a while. When are you going to get married? And then you get married and they say, oh, when are you going to have a baby? And then you have a baby and they say, well, when are you going to have two babies? Right. I was very surprised that when I published this book and started doing press and interviews and podcasts and whatnot, I was quite often asked, well, what's your next book about? And I was like, well, give me 5 minutes with this one. I'm still having a good time with this one. And I'd still like to sell more copies of this one. So I was a bit surprised at how immediately you're given clout and people just are like, okay, great, she's an author. And therefore wanting to hear and see more from me, which has been great. I mean, if, you know, God forbid I had to write, and not God forbid, but gun to head, if someone said, you have to write another book, Rebecca, what's it going to be? I do have two or three kind of milling around in my head.
Right.
But again, I'm still having a really good time with this one. So.
So what would you say if somebody was interested in being a children's book author, what would you say would be, what advice would you give them? Let's say that.
I would say, do it. I would say, don't let, and I know that's so trivial and it's so simple, but I have had quite a few friends. Cause again, as soon as you get a published book, everyone thinks you're like the expert on writing children's books, which I'm in no means an expert, but I have done it. So I do have the experience, and I've had quite a few friends who are like, oh, can we get together over coffee? I've got this idea I want to run by you, and it's probably stupid. And I know there's a million books out there about it, but I just wanted to see what you thought. There's a million cookbooks out there. There's a million parenting books out there by people with degrees and letters behind their name and all of that stuff. So who was I to write a children's book? Mm-hmm. But you know what? What the concept that worked for me and my family has got to work for another family. And I've got images and pages and videos and thank you notes and all that stuff from all these families that it has worked for. So just because there's a book out there about everything, right? Everything. There's probably not a book that hasn't been written about any subject. So why shouldn't you add your spin to it? Because the same way different messages resonate differently with our children, they will resonate differently with the reader. So I think if anyone has a desire to write a children's book or any kind of book, but since we're talking about children's book, go for it. Also, I don't know about when your kids were little, my kid had like 30 books in his room at all times. And You need the variety, you know, you can only do so many green eggs and ham, you know? So, I would just say, and I know that's the easy thing to say now in hindsight, but I wish I hadn't waited so long, maybe. But then again, I had to wait for the idea and the timing to be right for my son. So,
yeah. Yeah. You talk a lot about kind of your identity shift into being an author instead of, you know, being a mom or a, you know, talent acquisition specialist.
Yeah, no one's ever asked me to be on a podcast about being a headhunter. Not once.
Yeah, I understand that. So how would you suggest that people, you know, and you also mentioned something about, you know, people thinking, who am I to put my voice in this space? How would you suggest that people who want to move forward with that kind of quell their imposter syndrome, where they think, you know, my opinion's not worth putting out there, or other people surely must know about this. How would you suggest people, you know, combat that internally?
I think just talking about your idea with other people, and if you've got the right people surrounding you, whether that's at work or at home or at your church or Bunko Club, wherever, if you have the right people surrounding you, they will be honest with you. And honesty isn't always what people want to hear. Maybe the idea someone has isn't the best idea.
Right.
I don't know. I've had plenty of ideas in my life where people are like, you need to stop talking. That's not going anywhere, you know? But then the flip side of that is people, like with the growing bed, they were very supportive and inquisitive and whatnot. So I think just having the courage to talk to people about it and frame it however you want. Don't make it sound like a sales pitch. Just, you know, talk about it casually over coffee or whatnot, and then gauge people's reaction. And the only thing you have to lose by putting that concept, your idea, that book out there is time. And I know it's the one thing we can never get back and we never have enough of, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the reward is so much greater than the risk.
Yeah. Yeah. You must have a really awesome community and group of friends, because I know here in the Midwest, if you tell somebody you're going to do something, they'll just say, oh, that sounds nice.
Oh, really?
They would not give you real feedback on that. You know, I think the majority of people, I mean, my community notwithstanding, but I mean, it's notorious, especially in places like, you know, you mentioned like Minnesota and Michigan, where people are, they're so nice, but sometimes it is at the expense of, you know, something that needs to be heard.
Right. Well, you can be nice and honest at the same time.
And you can. That's true.
Yeah. I think some people might struggle with that. It is all in the delivery. But, you know, they don't have to be separate concepts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, you are correct. You should have a supportive community around you that if you say, I want to do something, they will give you real feedback and encourage you if they think it's at all possible.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And cool. and if you don't have a supportive feedback, then do it the quote unquote old fashioned way. Contact publishers, send them a few. I remember when I got off the phone with the publisher who signed me, she said, oh, just shoot me over the manuscript. And I was like, okay. And ran home and went, I have to write this down now. I didn't have a manuscript. So, you know, if you do not, if going through your support network or whatnot, or kind of talking to people about your idea seems too big or too intimidating, then write a bit of it down and do it the old fashioned way and submit your manuscript, and they'll tell you what they really think.
I bet.
Yeah. They'll give you honest feedback. Yeah.
So but how does that work? Like, if you have an idea for a book and you just write down the book and you give it to them, what stops them from just making that book?
Ethics and integrity.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And the fact, you know, everything's time stamped and dated and whatnot. So, you know, you can create your own NDA if you wanted and send that to publishers too. I've heard that is common. And most publishers don't keep making money if they don't keep publishing books, right? No. So they need to protect their reputation and they need to keep getting new material. So they are incentivized to read new potential books. So they don't want to do anything to jeopardize their reputation as a, you know, as a slimy publisher by stealing people's ideas.
Right. I mean, that's really good to hear, because I know in this age of like intellectual property and such, that people are really concerned when they have something that they think is, you know, is valuable, to just send it off to somebody, I think feels a little intimidating.
And you know, I wouldn't send the whole thing off. Like when I submitted this manuscript, and I'm using air quotes there, it was like the first 3 pages of my book. That was it. And I think I sent, I think I even sent in some stick figure drawings. I can't remember, but it wasn't the whole book. It wasn't the aha moment or the gotcha or the whatnot. It was very bird's eye view. And so, you know, I still kept enough to my chest that I wasn't giving it all away for free until I got the signed letter and the advance check.
Yeah. So I think I know why people are asking you what's your next book, because, you know, like, I want to ask you, what do you see in your future? Do you see like working with groups of parents? Do you see like supporting, you know, bringing this out to therapists? Or do you see moving into like more content that's similar? Or where do you see things progressing? I think that's the idea is like, this is interesting. Where is it going to go to?
Sure. It's been a very empowering thing, becoming an author. It's like I said, I never grew up wanting to do it. And now that I've done it, it's like, what else can I do? So it's actually been more inspiring to me to take a look at, well, what else is on my, because this was never on my bucket list, but there are a lot of things that are on my bucket list. And I've slowly started to, you know, reprioritize those and check some off. One of the things that was on my bucket list was learning how to play the piano. And I just participated in my first piano recital as a 40. Well, I wasn't 47 at the time. I'm 47 now. But participated as an adult in my first piano recital, because I was like, well, gosh darn it, if I could write a book and I never thought I could do that, what else can I do? So I learned to play the piano. And, you know, there's other things on my bucket list. I'd love to give a TED talk. I'd love to get my master's. I don't need my master's, but I've always wanted to do it. Yes. So it's been a very empowering and eye-opening experience that I did something I never thought I could do. And so now what else?
I mean, that's fantastic any, you talk about, you know, all you're losing is time, but to gain that kind of confidence, right? And belief in yourself, I think that's worth a lot.
Thanks. And I think it's good that my son sees that too, you know, that mom's not just mom. Mom's not just, you know, my resident Uber driver. She's not just the room mom. She's not just the lunch packer. She's not just, you know, the mom who likes to drink wine at night. You know, she's still a person and she's still learning. Even, you know, I'm still learning things. And I think that's important for our children to see that.
Yeah, that's a really powerful lesson for kids to see. And I mean, I think it happens naturally as they get older, and sometimes in the context of rebelling against the fact that, that they're like, you don't know everything.
Right.
But to see, but perhaps that can be a little bit subverted by being like, mom's trying to play piano and she's really sucks. And then, oh, wow, mom got better. But that's cool because she's like working on it, you know, just kind of like modeling.
Right. For a while, we were actually taking piano lessons together. And for a while, he was better than me because, you know, kids retain and learn stuff so quickly. And his little hands fit easier on our piano and things like that. So he kind of got a kick out of the fact that he was going through his piano book faster than I was. But
oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I remember when I lived in Chicago and I was taking Spanish lessons and I was on a public bus and I heard a little kid say, "Ventana." And I went, "Oh, wow." They said window. I was so proud of myself. But the kid was like 3 years old.
Right. So take the small wins when you can.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So what would be like the best course of action? I know you said just like apply to a publisher and talk with your community, but are there communities that are particularly supportive of people who are children's book authors, or is there something that like a group that you're a member of that could like people could go to
nurture that? I am sure that there are. I'm not a member of any professional organizations or organized groups where people mentor each other or encourage each other. But I know there have got to be, the same way that there are like, what are those like roundtable music writing sessions? I'm sure there are groups in almost every city where you could find other like-minded people. The good old Facebook likes to connect people that way. Mm-hmm. And I personally am not involved in any of those, but I do have my own book club, but we don't read my book every month, obviously. I'm sure there are groups out there.
That's fantastic. So where could people find your book?
Everywhere you can find books. You can find it at Amazon. You can find it Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart. Online, they all have it. I do always like to tell people if you buy it straight from me at thegrowingbed.com, then I can sign it and personalize it to little Timmy or little Sally or whatnot. But if you need it in 2 days flat, then I'd go to the good old Amazon.com.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Well, it was great to talk with you. I have not yet interviewed somebody who is a children's book author.
So, well, I'm honored to be your first children's book author.
and I really sincerely do love what you're saying about how once you accomplish something, just even as, I mean, I'm not demonizing it at all to say just publishing a children's book, but to something like that, how much it builds your confidence. That's an amazing lesson.
It really has taught me to give myself more credit than I think us women are used to giving each other. And I know you weren't poo-pooing authoring a children's book, but an even easier or more relatable example is when I got married, I was not a cook. And I was raised by a single mom, so it means we grew up on frozen pizza and macaroni and cheese because that's all she had energy to make at the end of the day, right? I turned out fine. And so I said, well, when I become a wife, I need to cook. I want to do this. Da, da, da. So I went to a famous chef. Her name's Rachel Ray. She's not in the spotlight as much as she used to be, but she had a very easy recipe for beef Wellington. Doesn't that sound fancy?
Oh, that is fancy.
It is fancy, but she really made it very, very simple. They're individual beef Wellingtons, and I made it, and it was amazing. It was so good. And to this day, my husband and I have been together almost 20 years. To this day, it's like our special fancy. It's our birthday or anniversary or Christmas Eve dinner. And I remember when I made that, I was like, if I can make beef Wellington, I can make anything. And it's just, you just need that one little bit of, I did it. And you're off to the races, no matter what it is, whether it's writing children's books or cooking for your family. You just need to, you know, again, what did I have to lose? I burnt the heck out of it and we had to order takeout. Fortunately, I didn't, but that was the worst thing. So you just start small with something you want to do and you'll realize you can do it. And then you're off and running.
Thanks for, that's a great inspirational message. It's awesome to talk with you today. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Huzzah. Hey. Sorry.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed the interview. I wanted to let you know that we're launching a sister podcast and we'd love for you to be on it. It's called Second Wind Women Jumpstart and it's a quick 15-minute deep dive for entrepreneurs who are just getting started or thinking about getting started and don't really know what they don't know and want to know where to go next. So be on the lookout for that.